essential fields of industry as rubber, metals, plastics, synthetics, textiles, and chemicals. Firestone presents Eyewitness to History. The event, the campaign.
This is Paul Niven aboard the Kennedy campaign special train, whistle-stopping across Michigan.
Ernest Leiser reporting from Los Angeles, where today Vice President Nixon is hitting the campaign trail in the old-fangled way. A political breakfast, a ticker tape parade, a rally at a shopping center, and an appearance at the big college campus, which was Pat Nixon's alma mater.
This is Charles Kuralt in New York. Tonight, a report on the campaign, how the candidates for president are attempting to reach the voters, how the men in the issues are affecting the voters, and who's ahead. This century's political campaigning started with William McKinley sitting on his front porch in Canton, Ohio, speaking to a few hundred people at a time. Last night, Richard Nixon and John Kennedy spoke from 1960's front porch, the television studio, and 60 million people were listening. McKinley won with his front porch campaign, but neither candidate in this election year is willing to take the same chance. Even with the multitudes available at the touch of a button, both Nixon and Kennedy have still found it necessary to roll up what may become a record number of campaign miles in seeking out the few gathered in the train sheds and auditoriums of the nation. Because there's something about a voter that demands to see his man right there in town, or to know that he's been there. And there's something about a candidate that demands to see his audience, listen to its voice, and shake its hand. And so, between the electronic debates, the handshake survives, the smile and the wave persist. And today in Michigan, the rattle of the campaign train was heard in the land.
This is Paul Niven aboard the Kennedy campaign special, whistle-stopping across southern Michigan. All over the country, say the Democratic officials aboard this train, the tide is running strongly in Kennedy's favor. They're especially happy with the results of the first three television debates. These debates may not have converted anybody, say the Democratic officials, but they did stabilize the potential Kennedy vote, and they did convince people that the vice president's picture of Kennedy as rash, immature, and inexperienced was simply not true. One top Kennedy strategist asked this morning whether he thought the senator would win if the election were held today, said, "I think so." He didn't sound very sure. He did sound confident when he said that Kennedy will win on November 8th. And he added, "Of course, I've always felt so, even before we started after the Democratic nomination." The senator himself, meanwhile, appears relaxed, poised, and supremely self-confident. Our train is pulling into Jackson, Michigan now, and on the platform in the depot awaiting it is CBS News correspondent Bernard Eisman.
Not many in this crowd remember the last Democratic presidential nominee to campaign through Jackson. He was William Jennings Bryan, who whistle-stopped along these same tracks at the turn of the century. For local Democrats, it's an important day, too. They expect to rate their own chances of victory in November by the size of the crowd that turns out to greet Kennedy this morning. As in all campaign crowds, many of the onlookers, despite their enthusiasm, are just too young to vote. As in all Kennedy crowds, a lot of the enthusiasm comes from the women, and the younger the woman, the greater the enthusiasm. The train's rolling into town now through this crowd that local police estimated somewhere between 6 and 7,000 people. All of them have seen Jack Kennedy on television, but this is a candidate in Jackson, Michigan. It's a day they'll never forget.
People of this community and the people of the state of Michigan and the people of the United States must decide which political party in 1960 serves a great national purpose. I believe we stand for a great national purpose. I believe that we stand for rebuilding the United States, for developing our economy, for moving ahead here at home and building our strength around the world. we look to the future. In the same way as in other days and in other years, Franklin Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson look to the future. I run against a candidate, Mr. Nixon, who runs on the slogan, "You've never had it so good." I want him to run on that slogan in the state of Michigan. I want him to run on that slogan in this community. I want him to run on that slogan all over the state. The state of Michigan has not recovered from the recession of 1958. Over 7% of its people are out of work. And now, at this time in October, when the auto industry is at its height, what is going to happen in January, February, March? What is the winter of 1961 going to be like here in this state and here in the United States? As long as in the fall of 1960, we are using only 50% of our steel capacity, as long as 35% of our brightest boys and girls never go to college, as long as there are things which are left to be done, I think it is the function of the Democratic Party to complete the unfinished business of this society, to get our country moving again, to provide jobs for our people. Are there any questions? Maybe we have a couple before we pull out. The question is whether we'll defend Quemoy and Matsu if it's part of an attack on the island of Formosa. In my judgment, if the attack on Quemoy and Matsu is part of an attack on the Pescadores and Formosa, then in my opinion, the entire area will become an area of war, unfortunately. The problem really is, should the line be drawn at the islands themselves, should the line be drawn as the treaty now draws it and as the administration at the Pescadores? If the action which takes place on the other side of the line is part of a general attack on the Formosa Pescadores area, then not only those islands, but also the entire area would become an area of military action, and I sustain that. Well, I think the question of what weapons ought to be used ought to wait the kind of attack and all the rest of the situation. The question is, what should I tell my parents who don't want to vote for you because of my religion? Well, I would ask them to first to study what I have stated on the matter, to study what I've said in regard to the separation of church and state, to realize that I've served in the Congress for 14 years, that I vote to sustain the Constitution, and then I would tell them to read the United States Constitution, which says there shall be no religious death for office.
While Senator Kennedy's train was rolling through Michigan today, Vice President Nixon was campaigning on a California campus. The Nixon Day in a moment, after this word from Firestone.
Here's a man who's making an important decision. He could be you. His car needs a new set of tires, but which tires to buy? Important questions, because when you drive, your safety and that of your family depends upon your tires. So you want the very best tire for your kind of driving. Well, Firestone has just the tire. The new Firestone Deluxe Champion. First choice on the 1961 cars and now available for your car. This is the tire that gives you greater traction with exclusive new all-action tread. A unique new one-piece tread with 83% more traction elements on the road. It gives you extra safety, surer starts and stops, smothers squeal on turns. And this is the tire that gives you up to 36% more mileage because it's made with exclusive longer-wearing Firestone Rubber X101 and a deeper, wider, flatter tread. This new Firestone Deluxe Champion wears longer and runs safer because it's been thoroughly tested for over 2 years. Tested and proved in Firestone laboratories. On Firestone's test track at Fort Stockton, Texas. And on the world's fastest speedways, where like all Firestone tires, it's speedway proved for your turnpike safety. So when it's time to replace, get the longer wearing new Firestone Deluxe Champion. on convenient payday terms if you wish at your nearby Firestone dealer or store.
Here at the pleasant Midtown campus of the University of Southern California, student population nearly 10,000, Vice President Nixon is making his principal public appearance in his hectic 3 days of campaigning in his old political stamping grounds here in the Los Angeles area. This kind of setting is as old as the history of American political campaigning. But a new note has been added. Included in this crowd, which is estimated to run about 6,000 to 8,000 people, included in this crowd are students from 27 campuses in the area. They are first-time voters. And the academic fathers here at Southern Cal have made this a pretty starchy affair. This, they have said, is no whistle stop. It's not a political rally. It's a first voters' convocation. And they say it offers the studied dignity available in perhaps no other forum. Fortunately, the dignity has been diluted just a little by kids carrying political posters, including some for Senator Kennedy. They are not in the script. They are not supposed to be here. But there is a preponderance of people carrying the banners that say Nixon for President, and there are a lot of the young Nixonette girls who met the Vice President when he arrived in the Los Angeles area.
The Vice President here out on the steps of Doheny Memorial Library, accompanied by USC President Topping, and accompanied by a famous Southern Cal alumna.
Thank you very much. Tremendous progress has been made, and interesting our college and university students, and for that matter, our high school students, in political matters, and also in interesting them in their responsibilities in the world community. You know a great deal more, I can assure you, about the great issues in this campaign than I knew about the issues of the campaigns of 38 and 40, in which I was the first voter after having finished the Duke University Law School.
Well, sir, what three issues then, upon which you and Mr. Kennedy seem to differ, do you believe will be the most decisive in bringing voters into your camp? And in each case, why do you believe that your stand is particularly decisive?
The issues which will prove most decisive are, of course, developing at the present time. They have been developed in the great debates that Senator Kennedy and I have been participating in over the past 3 weeks. I would begin, of course, in the field of foreign policy. I think the major issue that concerns people today is which of the two candidates, by experience, judgment, and background, can best lead the United States and the free world in this period, keep the peace, and keep it without surrender of principle or territory. This is the major issue about which people are concerned. Now again, there is no difference about our aims. We both want peace, and we both want to sustain freedom throughout the world. The question is one of judgment, the question is one of background, the question is one of means. I cannot speak of my own background appropriately as compared with my opponent. That's for you to judge. I can mention my running mates, and I can only say that I don't know of any man in the world today who has had more experience, or in my opinion, could have done a better job of fighting for the cause of peace and freedom than Henry Cabot Lodge, our ambassador to the United Nations. Both of us know Mr. Khrushchev. Therefore, you can be sure that our policies will be ones that will be designed to deal with him as he is and not as somebody may wish that he were.
Mr. Nixon, in an evaluation of your own assets, what one ability or abilities would you say most qualifies you and best equips you to be President of the United States?
That's a question that I generally would prefer not to answer. I have a different view about the presidency than some have. My study of history has always indicated that This country has elected some presidents, great ones, who have been Democrats and some who have been Republicans. But the greatness of the president has not been the result of his ambition. It is not something that is written on a campaign poster. It's something that comes from his ability at a particular time in history to represent the deepest ideals, the aspirations, the hopes of the people of a country. I can't say to this audience or to any audience that I am the man who has the qualifications and the background and the like that will produce the greatness that America needs, and I think we need great leadership. I will only say this. I do know the world. I do know the dangers that we face. I do know that America is going to need an effort militarily, economically, spiritually, morally, exceeding anything we have ever had in our country's history. I feel this deeply within me. I can only say that if I have the opportunity, I will, of course, give everything that I possibly can to move America forward, militarily, economically, spiritually, and morally, so that we can win the battle of freedom for the world.
The vice president is leaving to keep up his split-second campaign schedule in the Los Angeles area. His answers appear to have produced appreciation, but no wild demonstration of enthusiasm from this very well-behaved college audience. Even the Kennedy ringers in the crowd were docile. And Mr. Nixon again undertook to establish the campaign image that is his most consistent one, the image of dignity, experience, and sincerity.
Kennedy and Nixon have been going on like this for about 27,000 miles now, trying from television studios and train platforms and lecterns of every variety to touch whatever it is in a voter's consciousness that tells him how to vote. How well they're doing, what kind of impression the men and the issues are making on the voters, is the subject of a detailed poll conducted for CBS by public opinion analyst Elmo Roper. Here are Mr. Roper and CBS News correspondent Howard K. Smith.
With the campaign well past the halfway mark, we've tried to pick out some of the factors that seem to be influencing voters the most. Here are some of the factors as they've come out in the most typical of many, many interviews made before our cameras across the nation. As each statement is made, I will ask Mr. Elmo Roper to try to measure the influence of the factor mentioned. First, the question of the experience of the candidates.
Well, I'm going to vote for Dick Nixon. As far as I'm concerned, our major problem is the international situation. I think that takes precedence over everything else, and I think that Dick Nixon and Lodge are the strongest team that we could have to represent us in this crazy world that we have today.
Well, Mr. Roper, how representative is that man talking about experience?
Well, it seems to me this man is making two points. One, that the international situation is our major problem. And second, that the Nixon Lodge ticket is the most experienced team. If he is, he represents a lot of people. Foreign affairs takes an easy 2-to-1 lead over domestic affairs as the most important issue facing the country today. And the reason advanced by more people who intend to vote for Nixon than any other reason was that he has had more experience than Kennedy, particularly in foreign affairs. We find, too, that Henry Cabot Lodge strengthens the tickets in the eyes of 46% of all the people who plan to vote this fall. This compares with only 12% who say that Johnson's presence on the Democratic ticket makes them feel more favorable to the Kennedy ticket.
Well, that's the surprise of the campaign, I think, so far, and it certainly differs with the predictions we heard at the conventions when it was said that Senator Johnson would add a great deal to the Democratic ticket, but it was doubtful that Mr. Lodge would add much to the Republican one. Right. Well, next, the farm problem.
Well, I've picked Kennedy for my choice of this election because I feel the Democrats have done more in the past for the farmer, and I think they'll do more if they're elected this time.
How many people does that farmer speak for?
Well, there's no doubt that this man represents a good many unhappy farmers. As a matter of fact, however, we find that the farm proprietors throughout the United States say they're planning to vote for Nixon by about a 5-3 ratio, and the farm laborers for Kennedy by about a 4-3 ratio. Farmers for Nixon, incidentally, are for him mostly because of his experience in foreign affairs, not because of his farm program.
Well, let's turn now to everybody's economic problem, the pocketbook issue. Which candidate will do better by the average citizen on bread and butter questions?
I'm a cab driver. I'm going to vote Democrat. I've always been a Democrat. I think that Kennedy will make a very good man. I don't like Nixon because he makes a lot of rash promises that he never keeps. And in Democratic times, I've made more money than I do right now.
How widespread is that cab driver's view that Democratic times are better for the average man's pocketbook?
Well, this man represents the largest single block of people who will vote for Kennedy. The largest single number of people saying they intended to vote for him gave as the reason that he was good on domestic policy, that he was interested in the working classes and things like that. And the next biggest group, 22%, gave as their reason for voting for Senator Kennedy simply that he was a Democrat, and they preferred the Democratic Party as the party of the people.
Well, let's turn now to what is still the toughest question of all, and that is religion. We have found in our experience interviewing people that very few people, Catholics or Protestants, will say that religion affects their vote, and none will say it in front of a camera. However, a good many do express their preference in this way.
I am a minister of the gospel, pastor of a local Baptist church. In the forthcoming national election, I shall vote for Vice President Richard Nixon. I feel that from the standpoint of age, temperament, and experience, that he is the better of the two candidates. Also, I feel that Mr. Nixon, from the standpoint of being the freest to administer constitutional and democratic government, is the better of the two candidates.
How widespread do you think opinions like that are?
Well, apparently this man is giving three reasons for his Nixon vote. But I would assume that his last statement indicated that he felt Nixon would be less subject to pressure from his church than Kennedy would be. If I'm right in this assumption, then he represents about 16% of all the people who intend to vote for Nixon. I should like to point out, however, that this issue of religion is two-edged, and at the moment, Mr. Kennedy seems to be benefiting about equally with Mr. Nixon. Protestants plan to vote for Nixon at about a 2-1 ratio over Kennedy. But Catholics report that they intend to vote for Kennedy at a 4-1 ratio over Nixon. However, in terms of numbers, the disparity is not that wide because of the greater number of Protestants. Religion certainly is entering into this election, and there is evidence that some Catholics and some Protestants alike are voting just because of religion, although I am happy to say definitely not a majority of either.
Well, let's turn now to the question of civil rights. In the last election, a Negro told a reporter that the only one he would vote for would be the Supreme Court. And here is a view on that in this campaign.
I'm engaged in the general practice of dentistry. I haven't decided as to who I'm going to vote for in November, but my decision will be based upon how I feel each candidate stacks up with regards to the civil rights program.
How influential do your researches indicate that viewpoint is?
A good many people are concerned about civil rights. You'll recall I said foreign policy was the number one issue with the largest number of people. The largest single item mentioned as being a domestic problem people were personally concerned about was civil rights, integration, the Negro problem, mentioned by 11% of the total population. This is more than mentioned farm problems or labor union problems or taxation or the economy of the country, and for a specific issue is second only to the ability to deal with international problems. There's no question that votes will be won and lost on the issue of civil rights, particularly among Negroes. And insofar as this man's being undecided is concerned, may I point out that our latest figures show 11% of the people that we have every reason to believe will eventually wind up voting said they were undecided as to whom to vote for. This is roughly twice as many undecided as there were at the same time in 1956. This is not only a large enough number to cause a landslide for either candidate if they all went one way, But what is equally significant to you and me, Mr. Smith, it's a big enough number to give political commentators and posters some sleepless nights ahead.
Well, that takes us right up to the main question, and that is, who's ahead? Let's take a look at that one in a moment after this word from Firestone. More music after this message.
Stop and think about that battery of yours. Stop and think back. How long since you've had it checked? If it's been some time, stop in at your nearby Firestone dealer or store for a free battery check. Find out just how safe your battery is. Should you need a new battery, your Firestone dealer or store has a wide selection of 6 and 12-volt batteries for all cars and in a wide range of prices. This includes the famous dry charge battery, always fresh. Not until you buy it is power-producing acid added to the battery. And payday terms are available on all batteries. Remember, this is the time of year your battery works longest and hardest. So now is the time to get that free battery check at the familiar red and white sign of quality, Firestone.
Well, what about that key question? Who is ahead according to your latest samplings?
Well, our latest figures show Nixon with 46% of the people preferring him, Kennedy with 43%, and that big 11% undecided that I mentioned earlier.
So this election is still wide open and could be close, or indeed could not be close, too. It could be a landslide either way.
Unfortunately, all one can say now is that it looks close, but could be a landslide with 11% undecided.
Well, now, what has been the effect, or do you know, of the great debates on television on the campaign?
We don't know, but we're putting a study into the field Monday morning designed to answer that and some other questions.
Well, thank you very much, Elmo Roper. Now, here again is Charles Kuralt.
Tonight, in a speech he prepared for delivery in Los Angeles, Mr. Nixon is seeking to press that advantage of his on the issue of experience in foreign affairs. He has proposed a series of regional conferences around the world to strengthen the UN and the free nations, and he proposed that next spring's NATO meeting be turned into a Western summit conference. Next week, Eyewitness to History will yield the platform to the two candidates themselves for the fourth in their series of television debates. But we'll be back the following week with another in our series of reports from the scenes of big events. This is Charles Kuralt. Good evening.
On Friday, October 28th, at this same time, keep an eye on Eyewitness to History, brought to you by Firestone, whose thousands of quality products serve mankind around the world. Pioneer and pacemaker in such essential and diversified fields of industry as rubber, metals, plastics, synthetics, textiles, and chemicals. Firestone, fulfilling its pledge always to make the best today still better tomorrow. This week's event was reported by CBS News correspondents Ernest Leiser en route with Vice President Nixon, Paul Niven and Bernard Eisman en route with Senator Kennedy, and Howard K. Smith and Charles Kuralt in New York. This program, live, film, and videotape, was produced under the supervision and control of CBS News. The editorial judgments were solely those of CBS News.
Next Friday night, watch Vice President Nixon and Senator Kennedy in their fourth historic meeting on the CBS television network.